Welcome into the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Thank you so much for being with us again today to kind of take a look at Week 16 in the NFL, but actually we're going to do something a little bit differently. Instead of the game-by-game previews, which you can find at our website, profootballweekly.com, which we do on the Fantasy Football Podcast every game, we take a look at all the ins and outs, and again, we feel like we have that covered pretty well on the website. We encourage you to go check it out. Today, I want to do something different. Bring in Greg Gabriel, our draft expert, and of course, the longtime NFL scout, 30 years in the business, including 9 years as the Bears director of college scouting. So I'm going to bring Greg on the program here shortly because there's big news this week with both Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey, likely first round running backs opting out of their team's bowl games. And I know Greg has a pretty strong opinion on this. I know it's been a bit of a hot button debate this week. So I want to get Greg's take on that, what he thinks, what he's been hearing from his buddies in the league. And we'll do that momentarily. Later on in the podcast, I also want to welcome in Dan Pompey, the great Dan Pompey of Bleacher Report and The Athletic Chicago and WSCR in Chicago. You can find his work all over the place. And because the hot seat discussion is certainly heating up with only 2 weeks left, and because Dan did two terrific profiles of names who are going to be talked about frequently in John Gruden back in May, and then in September, Josh McDaniels, I thought it'd be fun to get his take on those two guys and just a little broader look at the potential carousel that will soon be spinning with head coaches coming and going. So we'll bring Dan on later in the program. And a quick disclaimer, I taped Dan's segment of the podcast before John Gruden came out and essentially removed himself from the Rams search. So we'll see if that, you know, pans out or is finished without John Gruden being involved. That's all fine and well, but Dan still had some great stuff, not only on Gruden and on Josh McDaniels, and I definitely still want to bring you that interview here in a little bit. So before we get Greg on the program, I do want to just let you know quickly about our great sponsor, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate brings you between 4 to 6 of the coolest curated mystery items every month straight to your doorstep. It's the best surprise you know is coming. Our next crate's theme is Origins. We have awesome and exclusive items from your old school favorites. This January, see where it all started and explore the iconic Origins with historic items featuring Superman, Captain America, Mario, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was always my favorite. Those are included, as always, our monthly t-shirt and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. So don't delay. This would make for an awesome holiday gift. Get a subscription to Loot Crate. You can do it with this promo code SHAW. And once you go to lootcrate.com/SHAW and enter that code one more time, SHAW, S-H-A-W, you'll save $3 off on any new subscription today. So thank you to our friends at Loot Crate. And we encourage you, especially for the fans of superheroes, to go check it out and maybe pick up a subscription or two for your friends. That is going to do it for our sponsor read, and now I do want to bring in Greg Gabriel. Again, Greg is a former college scouting director for the Bears and now is our great draft expert at profootballweekly.com. We'll be putting together, he's already in the process of putting together our great draft magazine and has weekly columns that we encourage you to check out on the website. Greg, I thought this week would be the right time to get you back on the podcast. We always enjoy you joining us, and there's a hot-button topic going on, to be sure, and I know you have a pretty strong opinion on it. Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey, All-American running backs, likely first-round draft picks, are not going to play in their team's bowl games, and this seems like it could be the start of a growing trend in college football. What can you tell us about that and how you and kind of others in the league are viewing their decisions?
Well, I could say a lot. I don't know if we have enough time. Number one, I think some people thought that it was going to be a trend, so to speak, in that it was going to start with Fournette and then McCaffrey joined in. But it's really much kind of ended there as we get closer to these bowl games. I think if other guys were going to, in fact, opt out, they would. We had the Baylor kid who did, but, you know, the reality was he wasn't a prospect. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, he's probably out of his mind. He had already been suspended by his team. You'd think he'd want to get all the looks he could to try to help himself, and by opting out, he doesn't help himself, he hurts himself. In both cases with Fournette and McCaffrey, they did have some injuries this year. So from that viewpoint, I get it, I understand it, but at the same time, it's a situation where a lot of evaluators will look at it as they're quitting on their teammates and how important is the game to them. And then it brings up a lot of other questions, especially if this thing grows and you got more people deciding to opt out of games. And that is, okay, the first thing is opt out of a bowl game. Now, what happens next? Do we get 8-10 games into the season? The season isn't going as expected for the college that you play for, so you say, you know, heck with it. I'm not going to finish the season. I'm healthy. I'm going to get ready for the pro draft and my possible NFL career. And I had talked to some people in the league, and they also think this could be a possibility. This trend could go in that direction. So I think the colleges, and you haven't heard anything yet, but I think behind the scenes they're discussing it. They're going to try to do something about it. What that is, I have no idea. It could be that scholarships are rewritten because of this. Because, the player does have an obligation to the school because he got a free education. I hear all the arguments to say, well, what about coaches, you know, quitting on their teams and going to another school? Hey, that's an entirely different thing, and that's not a good thing, and it's not correct for the coaches to do that, just as it's not correct for the players to do this here. Some will say it's a business decision. I get that it's a business decision, but again, you're talking about the character of the player, and I'm not talking personal character because I don't think anybody in Christian McCaffrey's looking at Christian McCaffrey is going to question his personal character. He comes from a great family. In fact, I was, when his dad got drafted, it was with the Giants, and I was on the Giants scouting staff and was involved in the drafting of his dad, you know, when he came out from Stanford years ago. But it does, you do question the football character. And when I say question, all it means is there's a red flag. Now you got to start doing more research on the player, find out a little bit more about his commitment to the game, his love of the game, his desire to be a great player, that type of thing. And, you know, it's going to cost time and a little bit more money to do that, because another thing that could happen, and I tweeted this out a few times, if a player's going to quit on his pro or on his college team, what's to prevent him 3 years from now, 4 years from now, doing the same thing at the pro level when he's trying to, say, protect himself for the next contract?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and a lot of really good points in there, Greg. I guess I do want to come back to you, though, on, you mentioned the coaches, and obviously Tom Herman is the example everyone will look to, leaving Houston before the bowl game, and you mentioned it as a separate issue, which I think you're right, but how are the players able to separate that? Don't you think they're looking at, and Herman's not the only guy who's done it, obviously, and they say, well, the program and my coaches aren't really looking out for me first, so why is it supposed to be differently in the other direction? Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it makes sense, and I understand the thought process. But now it's, again, they're two separate issues. The issue with the coaches, the college has got to put their foot down and say, we got a valid contract for you. Mm-hmm. And they don't, in the case of Herman, Houston basically let him out of the contract. He's got to pay a buyout.
Right.
But they didn't have to let him go. They chose to let him go and go to Texas, and they're going to get some sort of payment in return as part of the buyout. What is the college team getting in return from the player when he says, I'm not playing in the bowl game?
Right.
And, you know, some people say, well, the bowl game's not important. It doesn't matter. It's an exhibition. That's baloney. These bowl games have been going on for longer than I've been alive, and I'm 65 and a half years old. You know, so, they've been a big part of college football forever, or not forever, but for years and years and years. Now, granted, there probably are way too many bowls. There's games like a lot of the games we saw this week There's no attendance, and there's teams that got, you know, 6-6 and 7-5 records. And I agree that there's way too many bowl games. They should probably be cut in half and maybe more than that. But still, a lot of these games, and one is the Sun Bowl that I think McCaffrey was going to play. And Sun Bowl's been around a long time, and it's always been a good football game. And from the standpoint of just evaluating guys, you know, there may be one more thing you need to look at. Now, generally, you've got most of the evaluations done, but some of these bowl games are against teams that haven't played against each other, and there could be an interesting matchup. And I'm saying that, you know, it was an offensive lineman against a defensive lineman or whatever, or if it was a quarterback and he's playing against a real good defense, you want to see how he's going to play against that type of defense. So these games are important in the evaluation process.
Greg, what do you think about, I know these players have the opportunity, if they choose to take out insurance policies as another way to protect themselves financially, to allow them to, you know, play in these games and whatnot. What can you tell the listeners about these insurance policies and how much protection they can actually offer, and if you think that's a more viable alternative if you're not in favor of these players skipping out early?
Well, you know, these insurance policies, every single one of them is written a little bit differently.
Right.
And it depends what's in the policy itself, which is basically a contract, and what the clauses are. Some of them may be, you know, the player thinks he's a first-round pick, and so it may be that if he gets hurt, it prevents him from being a first-round pick, and the amount of money he's going to make as a first-round pick, there could be a payoff because he dropped in the draft ranking, so to speak. You know, it could be that. Others are, because of injury, you know, you've got to really never be able to play the game again in order to collect. So, and I'm not up to date on some of these things. So for me to sit here and try to talk about them without having really a lot of knowledge on these individual contracts or policies, you know,
right,
would be kind of ludicrous on my part and maybe saying the wrong thing.
What do you think in terms of, you know, what do you think about the position? I mean, I'm guessing it's not a coincidence that it's the running backs and it's kind of the most fickle of spots, and they're hard-pressed to get that second NFL contract. A lot of these guys, or at least the multi-year lucrative deals they're looking for. Does that change it at all, or it sounds like there's not a lot of gray area for you on this issue?
Well, I mean, I understand where kids who play that position are coming from.
Right.
A running back, on average, has a low shelf life once he gets to the NFL. You know, the lifespan of a running back is going to be a lot less than, say, an offensive lineman or whatever. And that's one of the reasons that the value of a running back has decreased in the draft in recent years, where, you know, the year when I was with the Bears, we took Seth Benson, three running backs went in the top five of that draft. You're never going to see that again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really because of the value of the position. And when you look at that draft, I think that was the 2006 draft, those guys all went in the top five. None of them had great careers. The one Cadillac, two of them were from Auburn, and Cadillac Williams had a very minimal career because of injury. And, you know, you go back and you look at the scouting reports. I remember what my scouting report said. It said he's 212 pounds, but he plays like he's 185. He's got 108, or I take that back. He's got the body of a 185-pound back that he's bulked up to 212, and he's just not going to withstand the pounding in the NFL. I remember I put in my report, if you get more than 4 years out of this player, it's a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the style. His body just wasn't built for NFL football. Seth Benson was a physical-type guy, and he had his personal problems with the Bears, and they let him loose, but he went to Cincinnati, put up some big numbers. He ended up rushing for just under 7,000 yards for his career. That's a pretty good career for any running back in the NFL.
Right.
So, I mean, he was a successful running back. He just wasn't as successful as you'd like for the Chicago Bears. And Ronnie Brown, you know, he lasted in the league, you know, quite a few years, but I don't think more than one season did he ever have great numbers. And then there's other backs through the years you can look at where they've gone high, and you could Trent Richardson is a perfect example. I mean, he never did anything as an NFL running back, so that brought the value down, and obviously the short shelf life because of injury. So I get that part, that they're trying to protect their bodies, but at the same time, go back through history, say just go back through the last 10 years, and regardless of position, how many injuries occur in a bowl game? You know, really minimal. Mm-hmm. And it's the same, but a football player, when you decide to play the game of football, you know it's going to be a tough physical game. You're signing up for it because you think you're a tough physical person, and that's part of the game. There you have injury risk every time you step on the field, and you accept that just by playing the game. So why are you walking away from something that you already know is a so-called problem, so to speak, I can't come up with the right word, of playing the game. And I just don't get that as a guy who's been doing this all my adult life.
Greg, we'll kind of end where we finish. I do want to just ask you about these running backs specifically in this class, but before I do that, we mentioned at the top how this seemed like it was going to be a growing trend, and then all of a sudden you got these two stud backs and no one else, except for, like you said, I think the Baylor guy. Do you think, is there been a backlash? Maybe, I know Bruce Arians came out and was outspoken about how this would be cause trepidation for him. Jalen Smith, the poster boy for seemingly these decisions, who got hurt, of course, in last year's Fiesta Bowl and probably went from a top five pick to a second round pick, coming out on Twitter and saying if he had to do it all over again, he'd play in the game. Do you suspect that impacted maybe more kids maybe making this decision, or what do you think that goes into that potentially?
Well, you left out another name that pretty high potential pick this year, and that's Myles Garrett from Texas A&M, defensive end. And he's another guy that played hurt. He missed three games. He had an ankle injury this year, missed three games, and there was some other games when he probably wasn't 100%, yet he said, hey, this is ridiculous. You know, you play the game because you love the game, you honor the game, you respect the game, and he was totally against these guys. But, originally I thought when this happened, I said there's going to be a backlash from people, not everybody, but there's going to be a backlash from people in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But now you think about it, and the two players, forget the Baylor guy, McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette, they're both underclassmen. Nobody in the NFL can publicly comment about an underclassman until he's already declared for the draft and accepted into the draft. That's okay. Not until January 18th. Mm-hmm. So if a general manager makes a comment, now he can make a general comment and just say, well, I'm against players opting out of games and for whatever reason not mention a name. But if you mention a player's name, you're liable to get hit with a fine from the league office because these guys technically aren't in the draft yet.
Right, okay. And then lastly, before I get to just quickly McCaffrey and Fournette, and what do you think about these guys? I did, I know you said you've been talking to guys in the NFL, many of them who agree with you. I only have a handful of numbers I can dial up, but I did one yesterday. And he said, well, what do these guys have left to prove? So he thought in these two specific examples that was what it boiled down to for him. And it sounds like it's very different for you. It's more that it's a team sport and it questions your football character, where he's looking at it more as an incentive thing and looking at his future. But what do these guys have left to prove? Do you think that this hurts either of their stock? Are they still first rounders? What will this do for the evaluation? I know you said it'll involve a little more digging for guys like yourselves.
Okay, making some phone calls and talking to some people, there are some red flags now with Fournette, and I think that's one of the reasons that LSU didn't even put up the slightest fight at all. Uh-huh. Especially, Ed Orgeron is an old school type coach, right. And he was like happy to see him go because there have been reports, off the record, so to speak, that Fournette checked out before the season even started.
Mm-hmm.
For this year, he would have preferred to come out last year. He couldn't because of the league rule. And you could go back to the Jadeveon Clowney thing. Jadeveon Clowney's final year at South Carolina was awful if you compare it to his first two seasons at South Carolina. He was playing not to get hurt and playing to protect himself rather than playing to win and be a great player. And he still went first in the draft, but he had to answer all those questions once he got to the combine, private workouts. And there were some teams that lowered him on their draft board. The team that had the first pick didn't, because they thought they saw the potential. But now you look what his career is. It wasn't until this year, and I think this is his fourth year in the league, that he's really done something as an NFL player. So, and part of it's been injury related, but part of it, I think, is just his character. He's never been known as the hardest worker in the world. I don't think you're going to have to worry about that with McCaffrey. Obviously, knew the family years ago. But again, he's going to have to answer questions that he wouldn't have had to answer before. And that's just all part of the scouting process.
All right, great stuff from Greg Gabriel. Greg, I wish we could keep you twice as long. I have so many more questions, but I understand it's the holidays. We are all busy, and we're appreciative of the time you were able to give us. We'll get you back on the program for sure once the season wraps up, as we turn into the real, full-tilt college scouting style. So thank you again so much. The happiest of holidays to you and yours, Greg, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon down the road.
Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you soon.
And one more thank you to Greg Gabriel for his excellent insights on an issue that won't be going away anytime soon. I can promise you that much. No matter where you stand on it, you're going to be hearing about this, and more kids are going to be making similar decisions, I would imagine, to those of Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey. So we will continue to discuss that on the pod, I'm sure, and at the website. But now, as I mentioned earlier, it's time to welcome in Dan Pompey of Bleacher Report to talk a little bit about the NFL hot seat buzz and a couple likely candidates who he has had a chance to spend some time with recently and kind of glean some interesting insights into what those guys are doing and how they're approaching potential next opportunities in the head coaching industry. So pleased to be joined now by the great Dan Pompey. You can find his work at Bleacher Report, The Athletic, at The Score here in Chicago, pretty much all over the place. And of course, danpompey.net as well. And find him on Twitter at Dan Pompey. Dan, how's it going?
It's going great, Arthur. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. The pleasure is all ours. And I've been meaning to get you on the program for a while. I'm glad we are finally able to today. And I'll tell you, Dan, as jobs start coming open across the league, you were kind of one of the first guys I thought of. I don't think you're a future head coaching candidate. Tell me if I'm wrong. But you've written a couple profiles over the past year of guys who I think are going to be near the top of the list for especially the Rams. I mean, we'll see about the Jaguars. We'll see what you say. But a couple great Bleacher Report profiles that I would encourage our listeners to check out on John Gruden and Josh McDaniels. Just very general, I'll tee it up first, Dan. Do you think that these guys are both ready and are in the mix and should be talked about as this offseason in the head coaching carousel starts spinning?
Well, I think that any team that has an opening has to seriously consider those two candidates, John Gruden and Josh McDaniels. And I think, Gruden has been considered every year since he's been out and has turned down opportunities to interview and really has kind of left the door open, though, the whole time. He never will say never. I spent a lot of time with him last off season. We talked a lot about it. And, there's still a very strong pull inside John Gruden to coach again. But I think he's very happy what he's doing, and he really likes working for ESPN, doing Monday Night Football. And he's kind of found a different way to live. But I think if a situation presented itself that was absolutely perfect for him, I think he still would feel, like I said, a really strong pull to go back to it. And the Rams situation is one of those that you could picture really being attractive to a lot of people, given the fact that the ownership situation is such that that Stan Kroenke doesn't really get involved in the football operations. The head coach will be able to have a lot of say over the entire operation, and of course they've got a decent roster, and of course the quarterback in Goff there being a player that a lot of people would like to work with. As far as McDaniels, really interesting guy because he, of course, had the opportunity in Denver that did not go very well. But I think he's kind of resurrected his career by going back to working with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in New England. And he's learned an awful lot, I think, from the first time he was a head coach. He was awfully young when the Broncos hired him, and I think he is a more mature man and a mature coach now, and a man, in my story I detailed many of the ways that he has kind of grown and seen the error of his ways when he was in Denver, and really kind of become a different coach at this point in his career.
Dan, I love the way that you did, you kind of framed the Josh McDaniels story, and you were able to kind of tap into this notebook of the McDaniels keeps of kind of self-repair and kind of lessons learned from the first go-around and how he can apply them moving forward. I want to ask you if there was a lesson or two that stood out that you think will be most important when he gets his second shot. But first, let's talk about Gruden real quick. I don't know if you saw, there was a Yahoo story by Charles Robinson, I believe Monday night, in which he said sources are telling him John Gruden is in fact the focal point of the Rams search. And I go back to your story. I think from May, you spent time with him around the draft. One of the things that stood out to me from the story is Gruden kind of lamenting that they never spent a first round pick on a quarterback either in Tampa or Oakland. My question to you, and you got Gruden to say just the great line in that story, I make weird noises, or I make noises when I watch Connor Cook. My question to you, Dan, do you know if he makes any similar noises about Jared Goff? What do you think his feelings are on him?
You know, I think he likes Goff a lot, too. I mean, as you said, Arthur, he really never had an opportunity to work with a young quarterback with that type of pedigree. They never drafted a quarterback high at any point in his coaching career. I mean, you know, if you go real early, when he wasn't an offensive coordinator, he was around some great ones like Steve Young and Brett Favre. But right, once he became an offensive coordinator or a head coach, they were mostly quarterbacks who were kind of resurrection projects. He did work with Rich Gannon when Gannon had some great seasons, but Gannon was a guy who really was not much of a quarterback at all for a good portion of his career, and he came on late in his career, really an aberration, and I think a little bit of a testament to Gruden's coaching and the offense that Gruden ran there. But he I think would love to work with a young guy like that and see what he can do in terms of developing him and trying to take him to the next level.
And Dan, as you said, and as you point out so well in the story, Gruden seems to be very content with where he's at now. Obviously, he has settled into doing a great job on the Monday Night Football broadcast, and I know I love listening to him because I learn something every time I watch a game that he broadcasts. But there's a couple lines in there right at the end. He says he's running out of time, and you can just kind of feel his passion for coaching. So you said it kind of has to be the perfect situation if he's to get back into it. But as you said, he's had a lot of teams that have called whenever openings come about. And just from your vantage point, do you think he would naturally be, I mean, he would be at the top of the list for really any job that's going to come open, especially one looking for an offensive mind and looking for a quarterback developer?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, he's got some special things on his resume.
Right.
The offensive mind, the quarterback developer, a Super Bowl victory, just a lot of experience, not only as a coach in the National Football League, but even his experience as a broadcaster, being able to go around to different teams and talk with different coaches and seeing how every team in the league does things. You know, that's, I think, a great advantage. And the other thing is, he has been doing nothing but grinding tape all these years.
Right.
And really, I think you could make the argument that John Gruden knows the game of football as well or better than anybody in the league or out of the league right now, because of all his contacts, all the coaches he works with at his fired Football Coaches Association. They come in there, they kind of have a little think tank, they exchange ideas. You know, he's pretty rare. And the other thing he has that's a great advantage is he has worked with all of the top quarterbacks in every draft going back now for a number of years,
right,
as they go down there for that Gruden quarterback camp. And he's had a chance to kind of get his hands on those players and coach them and talk shop with them and see what they were doing in college. So he's pretty special in terms of his grasp of where the game is now, where it could be going. And You know, from that standpoint, I think, you know, you'd be crazy if you were an NFL owner or general manager looking for a head coach and you didn't look at that guy.
Dan, there's no doubt about it, and you mentioned his just unbelievable film libraries and his organizational ability to have tape on everyone and literally have it separated by different dropbacks and different pressures. And it's really amazing the attention to detail. We know that's really necessary for any great coach. Let me ask you, though, very few, Dan, have had success having complete control. I believe there is also a line in that story, and again, this is from May, so it's been a little while now, but I think that was one of Gruden's, he wants to have that control if the job pops up. Very few people have done it successfully. Do you think because of his vast knowledge, as you just alluded to, is he one of those rare exceptions to the rule where you think he can make that work if he is granted complete personnel control in addition to head coach?
I honestly don't know, Arthur. I mean, that's a really difficult thing. As you said, there are so few people who have been able to do that well. And really, I think in today's game, the only one who is able to do it well consistently is Bill Belichick.
Right.
But I think, you know, regardless of who has the final say, I think it's really important for anyone to be surrounded with good people. And I think Gruden would need to be surrounded with good people. And that includes, obviously, a personnel man who, whatever his title would be, and a strong scouting staff and a good group of assistant coaches, too. I mean, the league is it's too hard for one man to do everything and do it as well as anybody. And there's just too many ways to fail and screw up if you think you can do everything yourself better than anybody else. You know, you can't, I don't think you can expect anyone to be like Bill Belichick, because he truly is a one of a kind.
Yeah, we're spending a few minutes with Dan Pompey, and find his work. Head to him on Twitter, at Dan Pompey, and you'll see all the various sites he writes for. Just a must follow, and you really need to check out these stories. They're fantastic. I think it's a pretty good segue, Dan. We talk about Bill Belichick. I said I wanted to mention Josh McDaniels as well, obviously. Just another great story in which you are able to get into this notebook of McDaniels is about all the lessons he's learned. And one of them is about that control and maybe being able to seed it in the future. A lot of people think that was part of McDaniels' downfall, kind of too much too soon and maybe taking on too much. Is that maybe the most important lesson, or maybe about treating others? I mean, he had a little bit of a bristly reputation as well. What were your takeaways from all the self-repair he's done over the years?
You know, I think there's a lot of really important lessons, and one of the most important to me would be learning that you really have to treat people with great respect and work with them instead of having them just work for you and take orders from you. One of the things that McDaniels did was actually during his time in St. Louis, because after he was fired by the Broncos, he was hired by the Rams as their offensive coordinator, which is kind of interesting given the opening now that the Rams have as head coach, because he obviously knows the organization and some of the higher-ups there and the people who would be in charge of bringing in the next head coach. But he, during that period when he was with the Rams, he spent some time with Tony Dungy, talking with Tony Dungy. And one of the takeaways from that was really, you know, it's a people business. And you cannot really isolate yourself or think you can do everything on your own, because you need to work with others and make them feel important and delegate. And that's something that I think he has done better and really made an effort to do since he has been in New England the second time, working with some of the assistant coaches there and also working with the players and even Tom Brady. You know, when he went back to New England for the second time, he kind of discovered that, well, Brady had grown in one direction. He, of course, had Bill O'Brien as his offensive coordinator for a while. And meanwhile, McDaniels kind of grew in a different direction offensively. So, you know, where they were a few years ago was not where they were now when they came back together. Mm-hmm. And they had to kind of have a little meeting of the minds and a give and take. And, you know, it was a good exercise for him in terms of being able to see things from another perspective and bend a little bit and give a little and get a little.
Dan, you mentioned Bill O'Brien, and he's actually been, I think, one of the more successful Belichick castoffs to go off on his own. And granted, it's very soon, and the jury's still out on Bill O'Brien in Houston, but you probably know what I'm getting at. The list of former assistants under Belichick who have went on and not had a great deal of success as head coaches is pretty long, and I wonder if you think that that is something that owners have to take into consideration when considering Josh McDaniels, if you think that that is a little bit of an obstacle that he has to overcome, even if maybe it isn't his fault.
Well, I think it's in the back of everyone's minds, mm-hmm. without a doubt, because really, you know that the Patriots have been successful no matter who the assistants have been, and you know that Belichick might be the best coach in the history of the game.
Right.
You know, obviously, it might be a little more difficult to assess how good some of his assistants are, or how to project them as head coaches. But I think, to me, McDaniels is pretty special. I mean, I think if you look at everything he's done, how he's done it, the way his career has gone, and the fact that he has been able to have that experience as a head coach, and you know, really, I think, learn from the failures. I think really makes him a pretty complete candidate. You know, he's a little bit like Bill Belichick was when the Patriots hired him after he had washed out as the Browns coach and then went to New York with the Jets for a bit, was supposed to become the head coach there, didn't, and then went to New England. I think, you know, you could really make the argument that McDaniels is at a similar stage in his career. I'm going to be really surprised if Josh McDaniels doesn't become a really, really successful, really, really good head football coach in the National Football League.
You know, the way we hear Belichick talk about him, the praise that he heaps on McDaniels, he's always said, you know, whenever he gets a job to do, he does it so well, and the way he has adapted so much and kind of just some of the self-awareness that we've discussed. Dan, I tend to agree with you on that McDaniels is going to be successful. It'll be interesting, though, to kind of see how this unfolds. It seems like it might be even a kind of slower-moving head coaching carousel this offseason. Obviously, two openings right now, one in Los Angeles, one in Jacksonville. It seems like Rex Ryan is probably in trouble, though nothing has been decided for sure there yet. At least I haven't looked in the news in the past couple hours. And it's just funny that you mentioned Bill Belichick as one of those retreads. It's like there's almost a stigma with some about, you know, hiring a retread coach, but they easily forget that Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll and, you know, soon Josh McDaniels and some of the best in the business are going to fall under that category. What do you think about some of the other candidates out there? Kyle Shanahan, I don't think you wrote any profiles on him this year. If you did, I apologize. But what do you think about someone like Kyle Shanahan? I know Tom Coughlin's name now starting to come up, even at age 71, a Super Bowl champion tied with his former team, the Jaguars.
Yeah, I think Kyle Shanahan's another guy you really have to look at. Really interesting guy. You know, he's a young coordinator, but a lot of experience. He's been around a long time. Obviously, he has the pedigree being the son of Mike, and he's worked with a lot of different quarterbacks and a number of different coaches at this point. He's having great success taking Matt Ryan to a level that he's never been at before in Atlanta. So, you know, if you are looking for that offensive mind and that quarterback guy, mm-hmm. I think he's a guy that definitely merits consideration. It's interesting, though, we talk about the retreads, and there are a few retreads now who are getting some play. I don't know if ultimately they're going to get play when teams start hiring, but, you know, you look at Tom Coughlin is a guy who keeps getting mentioned for these jobs now.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Smith is a guy who keeps getting mentioned for some of these jobs. And I think Jim Schwartz is a guy who we've heard could be in the mix. So, you know, I think there is something to be said for experience and having been there and done that, and these guys have that.
Dan, just kind of switching directions here for just a couple more minutes with Dan Pompey of Bleacher Report and The Athletic, WSCR in Chicago. You could find his work all over the place, and we would certainly encourage you to do that. What team that's kind of on the fringe of the playoff picture right now or locked into a last wild card seed or someone that's still fighting with 2 weeks left in the season, do you take the most seriously? And maybe on the flip side, who do you just not see as a team that really is in position to make any noise if they do get into the playoffs in January?
Well, one team I think everyone's a little nervous about right now is Green Bay Packers.
Right.
You know, they had that rough stretch during November. It was mostly November where they lost four games, and now they have won a few. And I think Aaron Rodgers is playing some really good football. They have kind of found ways, I think, to go around some of their deficiencies and get by with some new players. I mean, Ty Montgomery last week with an incredible performance against the Bears. They got a little healthier on defense. They're still nicked up, but I think they're a team that is very dangerous, especially given the quarterback. I always look at the quarterbacks in the playoffs and say, you know, it is a quarterback league, and they're often the players who are able to propel their teams the farthest. You know, certainly you wonder if the Raiders might have peaked a little early, because it seems like they have struggled a little bit lately, and they're a young team, but very talented team. We'll see if their defense holds up down the stretch. I would say, you know, that's one team that obviously has a very good record, but might be a team that struggles a little bit in the playoffs.
As far as another young team and still kind of the toast of the NFC right now, what do you make of the Dallas Cowboys, both as a potential Super Bowl contender, and what do you make of this kind of this rookie tandem that's sort of taken the league by storm, and how maybe one or both of them might factor into this MVP discussion in the final couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think the Cowboys are really solid. I really do. You know, the fact that I like the way they're built. You know, they obviously have the great running game, the great offensive line. I think they're kind of built differently from the majority of offenses in the NFL, and that works to their favor. And I think it also makes them a dangerous team as we get later into the season, because they're going to be able to control the clock and they're going to be able to succeed in all kinds of weather conditions, although from the looks of it, have they clinched they haven't clinched home field throughout yet.
No, I think
they've
just
got the, yeah, they've got the first round, but they very well could be playing all their games at home. And that would be a big factor too.
Right.
But you know, the one issue with them a little bit is their defense. People have questions about it, but they've gotten by pretty well with it so far without any great breakdown. So, you know, Dak Prescott has been so poised and avoids mistakes so well. That's a team that just does not beat itself. And you've got to appreciate a team like that when you get into the postseason.
Yeah, it was awesome to see the way Dak responded the other night after all the noise, and we know the noise in Dallas is a normal thing, but man, he really looked like he wasn't fazed, as he had been saying throughout the week about the Tony Romo discussion. Dan, last question for you, and thank you again so much for the time. It seems like kind of a weird year for the MVP conversation. Can you recall another one where maybe the two frontrunners, or at least two guys near the top of the list, and Tom Brady and Le'Veon Bell, missed a combined seven games to begin the season, and how amazing it is it that they're in this conversation despite that?
Yeah, it is crazy. Well, I think the other thing, Arthur, is that, you know, with two games to go, it really is still completely wide open. At least in my mind, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who I'm voting for yet. And I think the two guys on the Cowboys are, you could make a strong case for both Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. I wonder if they're going to kind of cancel each other out, though. Some people are going to vote for Dak, and some are going to vote for Zeke. And then you've got, you know, you certainly got Brady, and you certainly got Le'Veon, and I think there are others, too, who you could throw in the mix and probably will be thrown in the mix before it's over, you know, depending on how some of these teams finish and depending on how some of these players perform down the stretch. But I know I had... Someone else was asking me earlier in the week, you know, who are you going to vote for MVP? And I just had to kind of decline to answer because I really have no idea yet. And I think it's just too hard to say at this point.
Well, that does make it fun. A lot left to be decided down the home stretch, and that can only be considered a good thing. I agree with the Dallas guys, too. It's almost, we're here in Chicago, it's kind of the Kyle Hendricks, John Lester, Cy Young. They sort of canceled each other out. I wonder if that's going to happen again. Dan, we are out of time, and I don't know where it goes, but thank you so very much for being on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. This was an awesome pleasure, and we hope to get you back here soon, somewhere down the road.
My pleasure, Arthur. Thanks for having me.
All right. That is Dan Pompey of the Bleacher Report, The Athletic, and WSCR in Chicago. And Dan is a great follow on Twitter. If you're not doing so already, check him out at Dan Pompey.
And a thank you once again to Dan for coming on. Lots of great stuff there, and a real treat to get him on the podcast. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do it again sometime soon. And once more, thank you to Greg Gabriel. A thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Loot Crate. That's going to do it for our Pro Football Weekly podcast in Week 16. Once again, if you missed any of the preview breakdowns, or if you want to hear some of the way we hear it that we're working on of late at the website, we've got a story just up on Tom Coughlin being the front runner to get the Buffalo job that Rex Ryan is about to lose, and maybe Kyle Shanahan, a name to keep an eye on with the Rams job. Again, we talked about that in connection to potentially John Gruden and both Josh McDaniels. Kyle Shanahan just may be the front runner for that Rams opening. So make sure you head over to the website, profootballweekly.com, and check out all that and the other work that we've been putting out. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you are over at iTunes, subscribed to the Pro Football Weekly podcast while you're there. We'd love it if you leave us a rating. That helps us continue to gain traction here. And we just want to wish you a happy holiday season, happy, healthy holidays. Spend it with your family and friends and loved ones. I hope it's great. And all those holiday wishes come true. Be safe and make sure you safely get right back here for the Week 17 Pro Football Weekly podcast next week. Thank you again so much, and happy holidays, everyone.